if you think about people trying to escape Cuba. They're on makeshift rafts doing essentially the same thing you did, but they're crossing a large body of water as well. I mean, the desert is no picnic, but that just shows the length that people will go to get out of a bad situation. And I can't fault anyone for trying to improve their situation.
Yeah, and I can completely understand it. I can understand all the different opinions. And I think that a lot has to do with the extent of our suffering. Like, have you ever been in a situation where you said, let me make this makeshift raft and go cross the ocean? Like, has anything ever been in your life that has driven you to that point to say, let me pick up my child and cross a country illegally and risk getting killed or dying?
We at the Collective Perspective podcast have set out on a mission to understand some of the most impactful and controversial trends and topics in our lives today. Hi, I'm Jeff.
I'm Travis.
I'm DJ.
Can we find common ground in the middle in a peaceful manner?
Not for political gain,
but for real community benefit.
We believe so. As veterans and concerned citizens, we are bringing together diverse views and fact-based research to navigate this tough terrain in search of a viable path forward.
Only time will tell, but if we listen with open minds and try to understand each other, we just may find a solution, or two, collectively.
That is why we care about what you have to say. If something piques your interest or ruffles your feathers or tickles your fancy or whatever else you'd like, leave us an audio message at podinbox.com/collective perspective podcast, all one word, or directly on our show page at mtsjax.fm/collective perspective podcast. You'll have to log in, but that won't cost much more than your time.
We'll be discussing your messages on the show, whether you give us a high five or say, hey, you better do some fact checking, fool. As long as it's positive and it's your perspective, we'll possibly give you some airtime. But remember, it needs to be family friendly and not defamatory in nature.
Hey, everybody, this is Collective Perspective Podcast, and we're here in sunny Jacksonville, Florida, talking with you
collectively
from the Main Street Suite at Mixed Theory Studios.
Collectively.
The 90 Forward is commemorating Jacksonville's bicentennial with their 200 Race Card Conversations initiative, igniting small conversations of racial healing and equity on a massive scale throughout 2022. Join the conversation. Our community can heal from the racial wounds of the past and build a future where everyone thrives collectively. Sponsored by the 90 Forward, this episode of the Collective Perspective podcast contains one of these conversations. Visit 90forward.org for more information on the 200 Conversations Initiative. That's 904WARD.org. A digital copy of the race cards are available for download through the Apple and Google Play app stores.
Hey, everybody. This is Jeff, and welcome to the Collective Perspective. Today, we have a special series that we're doing with 90 Forward as our sponsor, and it's race cards. I have my buddy Travis here.
What's up, everybody?
And I have Miss Alejandra Megan and Sam Mora.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. I'm so honored to be here with both of you. Speaking about what's very important to us as a business. It's a strong part of our mission, race card. So I'm honored to be here with you.
Thank you.
Thanks. We're honored to have you ladies here too. Can you please give your foundation or your business a plug?
Yes. So the company is Jack's Natural Healing. It's two components. There's the chiropractic, personal injury. And then we also felt it was very important that for healing, it's not just about healing the physical body. I think emotionally, there's a lot of healing that needs to happen as well. So we included the yoga portion, so which is called Viva Yoga Studio, all under Jack's Natural Healing. So both share the space, share the home. And the company was just born out of the desire to bring wellness, to bring healing to everybody, to make it affordable, to make it accessible, and to make it a safe space for all.
Nice.
Yes, that sounds very, very helpful.
Do you have a website?
We actually just redid our website, so it's pretty exciting. It's jacksonvillenaturalhealing.com. We've also been nominated for Bold City Best of 2022 for Best Chiropractic and Best Yoga. So that's pretty exciting, and you can vote for us on the website.
And what was the name of the yoga?
Viva Yoga,
Viva
which
yoga.
Means live. Yeah, live yoga.
So with the race cards, I wanted to go over the rules. So each of us takes a turn from the deck, and the person who pulls a card should respond to the question on the card. And after that person finishes, others in the group share their own responses and discuss topics more in depth. So first, Listen to understand, not to reply. Ask the question when you have one. Tips for a good discussion is assemble a diverse group. You should learn more by talking to people with different experiences. Discuss each card for 10 to 15 minutes, then move over to additional topics. Share an example or ask for one if you don't understand something. These conversations can be difficult. It's okay to acknowledge your own response. Stay open to both, and to your feelings and to those of others. So look, that's what this whole podcast is about. Nobody is ever here to tell you that what you think is stupid or you shouldn't think that. It's all about taking collective perspectives, hence the name, and knowing that there is diversity in the middle, and we all can find common ground. And the media and everybody in the outside world just falls into their negativity and them wanting to turn each other against each other. So we'll just shuffle the card. I can read it, and then I can start if you want.
Cool. Sounds like a plan.
The first question is, when did you first become aware of your racial identity? Wow, that's so unfair. I'm an honest guy, and I guess I'm prepared to discuss that. So, you know, what I get from that is kids don't know race, right? They don't see color. They don't understand any of that. They just can't perceive that. I would imagine that they could tell that
their friends, their classmates are
different than them. But when it comes like, hey, I'm white and you're not, or you're this, when did that come about in my life? I'd say that's kind of a heavy question for me because I wasn't of the best light. The best way I can put it is that throughout life, I've learned through experiences that when I was a youth and I was a skinhead, that has changed my life to where I don't think that way anymore. But it was the environment that I was in. I remember maybe my first experience is that I was really into Southern California punk rock. So back in the 80s, when I roamed, things were a lot different. You know, we just got out of the 70s and the racial tensions. I would say that my grandfather on my mother's side was racist, always using the N-word. And I got in with a crowd that didn't believe in, well, we didn't necessarily believe that in Nazism because we were proud to be American, but it was American pride and it was white pride. You know, the whole time my dad was like, man, you're in part of a gang. I'm like, no, I'm in an organization. And I'd never considered myself in a gang, but I was. And I did some bad things, basically just destruction of property and things like that, vandalism, and just kind of explore my youth. But I had a 13-inch mohawk at one time. If I put it up, it was pretty tall. I'm not proud of any of that now, but I can tell you that I joined the Navy when I was 19. And I met a black gentleman, Desmond Miller. I wish I could find Desmond because he changed my life. You know, it wasn't a matter of the color of the skin and where you were born. It was your heart. And we went to the Persian Gulf together. You know, we were part of that. And it was brotherhood that brought us together. And it changed my life ever since then.
So would you say that's when you've maybe reassessed your racial identity?
That is definitely when I said, you know what, like this whole racial thing is crazy. I'm just lucky that I got out of that gang before I ended up in prison. I could have maybe a couple times for some violent things, but I think that's where I identified racially. I'm obviously verbally talking about it, you know, when I was that age. And it was something that we discussed all the time. But again, you know, that's kind of a tough thing to tell people because I don't want you to judge me. Bob Marley also changed my life. He just talks the wisdom and the unity. And I actually have a tattoo here that says equality is greater than division. And that's my favorite tattoo of all the tattoos I have.
My takeaway from what I just heard was it's beautiful that you mentioned the word brotherhood when you met Desmond. And so when brotherhood, we think of that word as it relates to like skinheads, like Aryan Nation, like that's the brotherhood, right? But you used it different context, brotherhood to, was he a black American?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a brotherhood there too. Like probably the word changed for you and the meaning and how you used it. It was a different type of brotherhood.
Opened your eyes to a whole nother like side of yourself to say, hey, why be shut into one group when I identify with him as well as those other folks. So you opened your mind a little more, had that intellectual humility saying, hey, that's wrong thing, you know, before I go to prison or, you know, whatnot. You're throwing that idea out there that, hey, I could go to prison for what I'm doing. And you didn't care. And then once you started talking to Desmond, it's like, hey, you know what? I do care.
Well, I mean, by the time I joined the military, I wasn't violent. My viewpoints were still there. I still dressed that way, you know, with the boots and the laces and all that. But after that, yeah, I mean, my whole life changed in that respect. And it was just more like, you know, the more I traveled around the world, and then actually Travis and I met in Spain. We were both stationed there in the military, and like, man, I love Spain. I didn't want to leave.
No one does.
Nobody wants to leave Spain. And I came back to the United States, and I was such culture shock.
Yeah, the culture shock when we come back from another country is crazy. It's real. I spent 3 years in Japan even, and after being in Japan, coming back, you're like, whoa, why aren't people as nice as I thought they were? You know, Japanese people are extremely nice. But when we came back to the U.S., it's like, get out of my way.
When did you become racially aware?
I'm from a single parent upbringing, and we never really had those discussions. There were factions in high school. This is what, early mid 90s when I was in high school down in Central Florida. We had the rednecks, we had the black group, we had the jocks, we had the band people. You know, everybody was separating in high school. That's when I think I became more aware of where I fit in or where I was supposed to fit in. I fit in with a lot of different cliques and a lot of different groups in school. And I'm not sure if that was like a survival thing, because we moved from city to city. I went to a different school every year up until high school. So, you know, my racial identity, I knew I was white, but I didn't care what other people were. If they talked to me, they talked to me. And, I had another friend. That was kind of how it was for me growing up. And then when I joined the military, and boot camp kind of makes you gung-ho a little bit, patriotic. And then when you go overseas and you see, you know, how other cultures live, it was shocking to me, but it was also one of the best learning experiences I could have ever had. But getting out of your comfort zone, I think, is not as easy for some people. I find that doing that, getting lost somewhere and being literally the minority in it, it teaches you a lot about how you handle yourself and how you see people when they see you. So, you have to have that self-awareness to know what your weaknesses are and where you can grow from it. And the racial issue didn't really show up much, especially in Europe. I mean, in Europe, it's not as bad. In Japan, you know, I stand out like a sore thumb. And there were some places that you'd go over there, white people weren't allowed. I mean, just they throw their arms up, no gaijin, no gaijin. You couldn't go into that shop. It's like, whoa, okay. All right, next. But I'd say I was more aware of my racial identity in high school, but still open. I didn't close myself off to other people, other ethnicities, other races or anything.
You know, it's funny, my first wife was Mexican. My second wife, I've been married 3 times, so I can't give you any relationship advice. Okay. My second wife's from Panama, and now I'm married to an Irish girl. How about you ladies? When did you learn your racial identity?
Yeah, I'm an immigrant here to this country. I was born in Mexico and came probably about around the age of 5. So luckily, not speaking English kept prolonging that, becoming aware of my racial identity a little bit longer, because I didn't understand what anybody was saying until I could. And I was called a wetback, and I didn't understand the term, because in my mind, I'm just trying to translate it. Okay, back wet. My back's not wet. Like, what? I don't know what that means. I don't know what you're trying to say to me right now, because my back is dry. You know, so I'm like thinking literally, like, I'm not a wetback. My back is dry. And until somebody said, no, they're calling you this because of this. And I was like, oh, because, you know, wetback is a term that's used to somebody that's crossing the border, especially the Rio Grande. So you're automatically a wetback. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, I did cross. I didn't cross a river.
Which is kind of weird because isn't your whole body wet?
Just your back. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
Somehow, so that's when I became aware of, oh, I'm not like them. So I knew that the language was different, but I didn't feel like other until I understood what that meant.
Let's just face it, there's racists out in the world. And one of the other podcasts we had labeling people, what was it? Slurs.
Oh, slurs.
And wetback would be a slur.
Yeah, it would be.
Like gringo is a slur.
Gaijin is a slur.
I feel like that's how it starts. It was a slur for me, too. I was called a spick, and that was how I first realized. I'm from Queens, New York. I grew up in Corona, Queens. Corona has a whole different meaning now, though. And it was all Spanish neighborhood. And then as I got a little older, my family moved us to Long Island. And then we moved into predominantly white neighborhood. And when I went to middle school, there was no girls that looked like me. And then I remember a boy came up to me, and he called me a spick. And then hours later, he was like, I meant to say spectacular. I mean, and I was, you know, just...
Did you roll your eyes like
no,
I just did?
No, I told him, fuck off. So, I mean, that was... I don't know if you could say that on this thing. So you might have to blur me out. I grew up in Queens, so I was told, defend yourself how you could and say what you needed to. So, I mean, that's what I did.
As kids, they say that... Going through these traumatic experiences, even just words, it's like a child fighting. It's the equivalent of a child fighting in a war. Mm. It causes the same impact on the brain, on the body, on the stress.
Like if you go through some traumatic stuff, 1 through 5, you're almost guaranteed that you can't fix it. It's pretty hard to reverse. I don't think enough people talk about that, especially like just random things like emotional neglect. It's very important that someone knows how to deal with their emotions. Otherwise, you get all these people that need to go to anger management classes.
Well, if your needs aren't being met as a child where you don't feel safety or security, even that in itself can be traumatic. It doesn't even have to be this big thing as, you know, obviously there's traumas like being abused, but then it could just be as simple as somebody didn't feed you dinner. And we don't know the effect that it's going to have on a brain that's still developing.
Going back to what you said, I think, no, you can never reverse it completely. Like it's never going to go away, but there are therapies and especially body-based therapies that you can bring into to help release some of those traumas, to work through the triggers, you know, anytime it comes up and you get triggered, because it's not always very clear, like, oh, let me call you a spick again and that's going to trigger you. Sometimes it can be triggering just to walk into a room with nothing but white people. Mm-hmm. You know, that's triggering. Or hearing a joke being made in the background about somebody of color, that's triggering. So your body will respond. You'll respond in your reactions and your actions and your words, and you don't really understand why. But there are body-based therapies. Yoga has been shown for sure to help release and work through PTSD, through trauma. Like for me, a lot of those experiences are always with me, but I just deal with them in a different way.
Hey, everybody, I just want to give a shout out to 90 Forward. Thank you for sponsoring this podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you, 90 Forward.
In 2015, 90 Forward began with a small, diverse group of friends who were open to discussing, challenging, and supporting each other in racial equity. Starting with conversations, the group committed to take action to build a more inclusive Jacksonville. Since then, the movement has grown to a network of thousands of volunteers.
The 90 Forward Race Card Deck is a tool designed to help people take part in productive, authentic discussions about race. Their 200 Conversations for 200 Years initiative uses the race card discussions to commemorate Jacksonville's bicentennial birthday on June 15th. As they say, history brings healing. And we're doing our part by having 5 conversations throughout the month of June.
What we're hoping to do with 90 Forward is ignite small conversations of racial healing and equality on a massive scale throughout the year 2022. Join the conversation powered by 90 Forward. Our community can heal from the racial wounds of the past and build a future where everyone thrives collectively.
Collectively.
Visit 90forward.org for more information on the 200 Conversations initiative and their race cards. That is 904WARD.org. The 904 is always looking for volunteers to become part of their initiatives. If you're interested in volunteering, email them at info@904word.org.
As you mentioned, you came over as an immigrant. Do immigrants help or hurt our economy?
Well, I'm just going to speak for me, from what I've done throughout my life and my family. So we came to this country, we went into the migrant crop working, so we would follow the crops in California, pick cotton, pick fruit. My first job was picking figs, then moved on, you know, went into college.
What part of California?
The San Joaquin Valley.
The dirtiest air in the country.
Yes, absolutely.
I've lived there too.
Yeah, it is.
That's why I meant. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, then went on, you know, graduated high school, joined the military as well. I was in the Navy. Oh, I've served.
Thanks for your service.
You're welcome. Thank you. And also thank you guys for your service. Thanks. Went on to serve, got out honorably, was active in a nonprofit up in D.C., have, by trade, I'm a respiratory therapist. So took care of, I don't know, thousands of patients. Family still works. Farmers out in San Joaquin Valley. Moving on, you know, I've raised two great kids. I've never, you know, involved in any kind of problems or issues, just good moral citizens. And then I went on to open up this business. So just reflecting back on my life and looking back at my family, absolutely, we've been a contribution to society, to this country. Like everything that we have done is not just to better ourselves, but we also collectively try to better where we live, the people around us. So just from me and my experience, absolutely, we've been a positive impact to this country, to the nation, serving in the military, you know, raising two moral, conscious, awake children. And then now serving a business, having, you know, subcontractors, employees. So yeah, lots of positive there.
I don't see how it hurts the economy. So I guess my answer would be it does help the economy, injecting funds into local businesses, you know, the cheap labor, depending on the type of immigrant, legal or illegal, makes a difference, but not a huge difference in terms of helping the economy. If you're here in the country and you're spending, you're helping the economy. I don't really think that it could hurt the economy, because the economy is growth, is what we're spending on durable goods, services, and such.
My take on it is I definitely don't think it hurts the economy. I think a lot of the jobs that some Americans just refuse to do for whatever reason, like farming and stuff, they don't go out and do that. You know, one of the movies, and I believe this is not a derogatory thing at all, but A Day Without a Mexican. Have you ever saw that movie?
Yes, yes.
It was so great, I thought, because it just depicted how much they do for the economy. How dependent people are. And these service industry jobs are things that help run our country. It's a team type thing. Without someone doing these services that they depicted in the movie, you know, everything just stopped. Civilization stopped. I'll make it known that I love Mexican food. That's probably I can eat it every day type of thing. I thought that was a good movie to depict in some way. And it's a comedy, actually, rated R. But to me, you know, this whole immigration topic is a kind of a political thing with the wall and everything like that. I would much rather, for all of the immigrants that are here, is just say, hey, legalize them all. Like, why are we going to take all the money to try to deport all of them and all that money to try to do that when these are upholding citizens? There are other people, non-immigrants, that are worse citizens than the immigrants. Main thing is to, in my mind, is to find something better than what I had before. Mm-hmm. And going to the United States has to be a lot better than some of the cities I've seen in Mexico and Panama and stuff, where there's just not anything there. And the Mexican government is kind of unstable in a lot of ways. And the cartels run everything. And you guys just want to get away from that. I don't see that being an issue personally.
Yeah, nobody is coming here because they just woke up one day and they're like, oh, I think I'll cross the border and risk my life and go into the U.S. I don't know if you saw just today, they found, I think it was 4 or 5 people dead on a train because they were hiding and it just became too hot. And they were trying to cross on the train into the U.S., but they were found, unfortunately, all dead. So nobody is coming because it's like this great adventure, like we're going to go hiking across the U.S. and into Yosemite and nothing like that. People are coming because it's survival. They're doing what they need to do to survive, for their kids to survive, crossing just young children. Yeah. Risking right. their lives. It's not just a day, a walk in the park.
I'm kind of mixed on this because my wife is an immigrant also, but she came from Laos. Her brother got accepted into the U.S. first. He joined the army and he was able to sponsor more of the family in. And there were other families that had to sponsor people. But her family crossed the Mekong River in the middle of the night from Laos into Thailand. And they spent 4 years in a refugee camp before they were accepted into the United States. They made it in. She did her schooling and became a naturalized citizen and joined the military and has gone on with careers since then. Now, I hate that the government has onerous rules, regulations to become a citizen. At the same time, having someone who earned it that way be jumped in line by someone who just, hey, look, we're having a tough time. We got to get out of here. Yeah, we're going to cross over. To have them just bumped in ahead of line and getting their citizenship in front of someone who's doing it the right way, there has to be a thought somewhere, all right, how do I do this the right way without getting in trouble? Did that ever cross anyone's mind coming from the south up to the north like that?
Well, I mean, I can really only speak for myself, but, you know, when you're faced with, like, survival, like, how do I stay alive? How do I keep my kids alive? Like, my mom crossed with us by herself, and it was my sister and I, you know, we were 5 or 6. So something in her had to say, like, this is the best thing that I can offer my children. And so when we came, luckily, Ronald Reagan was in office and he implemented naturalization and citizenship and created a path. However, that path, you know, we came and applied for citizenship. So it wasn't like we're not going to do anything. No, we were proactive about it, applied for our citizenship, went through the process. So here I am, 5, 6 years old, enter the U.S. My mom applied for our green cards and naturalization. We started the process probably a couple days after I turned 18. They say, oh, congratulations. So this is like 15 years of this process. So we receive a letter saying, congratulations, you received your naturalization, your citizenship. Oh, but this child didn't because she just turned 18. So after all these years of going through the interviews, paying the thousands of dollars that it costs to do this, going through the whole, you know, appointment, interviews, blah, 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 test. And then at the end of it all, they say, oh, because of this little rule, you don't get it.
And you know what? So I was going to say this, like you were mentioning the right way. For me, when I look at it, it's not a right way. It's the legal way. And then whatever way you decide.
Right.
Right. And, you know, you make the choice in the process. What's the best choice for you? Because who's to say what's right? You went throughout that whole process and then you're met with that at the end.
Right.
Right. And so it's just the legal way or whatever way you choose. And if you're back against the wall, I'm going to do everything illegal to save my family.
Well, my family's been doing this for a long time. My uncle married a woman from Thailand. My dad married a Filipino woman, and getting their green card and their citizenship for the U.S. or dual citizenship, however they're doing it, has been 10, 15 years. It mm-hmm. takes a long time and a lot of money. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. And that seems to be the only purpose that these rules serve is make the revenue for the government. I mean, that's really who you're paying. You're paying the government for a piece of paper that says, hey, I can be a citizen.
That's a very hard message. You know, I respect what you said and that, you know, maybe there's a right way and why not do it that way. But it's very hard to hear that looking back on my life, on everything that I went through, all the hardships, you know, the abuse, the racism, the discrimination, because I didn't enter the right way. When people express it that way, it's very hard. Like, it lands on me hard. Like, my body just tensed up when you said that because I was like, I know what he's going
to
say. And oh my gosh.
I don't mean
so my body was just like,
No.
I understand. Okay. I understand completely. And you're entitled to that. And I get it. Like, I can see the argument. But then there's people like me. We came in as children. Like, we didn't know anything about the right way.
I'm sure during the time of Ronald Reagan was a lot different than now, too.
Oh, yeah.
And that's around the time my wife came in like the early 80 and 84 is when she came in.
Yeah. Look, here's the thing is that type of stuff was offered.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Her mother, down where she was, she didn't have that opportunity. She didn't have that same offer.
No, they did. She said, you said she did it the right way. She went and asked, applied for the
citizenship. No, once we came into the States, you know, crossed illegally. And then once we were here, then she figured out a way, okay, now can I make this?
This may sound ignorant. I don't know. You weren't smuggled in. You came across a checkpoint or a border?
Oh, no. We came in through what's called the coyote.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
oh,
so she paid.
I had no idea.
And was indebted to these people.
A coyote is a person.
Coyote. It's a term that we use for people who, this is what they do. Their living is crossing people illegally over the border. So they do it by train, by bus, by hiding people in cars, by however they have to do it. So
big rigs.
Yes.
I've seen some of the footage of it, and it's not pretty. I mean, smuggling people in is very dangerous. I don't mean to take away from the trials and tribulations you went through to get through here. That's very disheartening. I mean, it's heartbreaking that people will go through that. If you think about people trying to escape Cuba. They're on makeshift rafts doing essentially the same thing you did, but they're crossing a large body of water as well. I mean, the desert is no picnic, but that just shows the length that people will go to get out of a bad situation. And I can't fault anyone for trying to improve their situation.
Yeah, and I can completely understand it. I can understand all the different opinions. And I think that a lot has to do with the extent of our suffering. Like, have you ever been in a situation where you said, let me make this makeshift raft and go cross the ocean? Like, has anything ever been in your life that has driven you to that point to say, let me pick up my child and cross a country illegally and risk getting killed or dying?
I think if your mom had the option of, hey, sign up here and we can get you across and you just have to do these things and it's government sanctioned, that your mom would have signed up.
If it was that easy.
If it was that easy,
right. But it's not.
Y'all, I can't even imagine. During COVID, and we were in New York, and I wanted a better life for myself, so we moved to Florida. If somebody told me I couldn't move to Florida,
you made the right choice.
This is Sunshine State. Let me go, please. I probably would have done anything to get here. So I can't imagine to that extent.
How about you, Sam?
Were your parents born here, or were you the firstborn child here?
So my mom was born here. My dad was born in Ecuador. So okay. He had to get his citizenship too when he was here. My grandparents, but my family still lives in Ecuador. I mean, for me, I don't have too much of an opinion or understanding on it. I mean, I understand my dad and what he had to go through with his green card and citizenship. And again, it was a long process. So I was older even when he was still trying to figure it out. And then there was different things that he had issues with when Trump was in office. So it's a constant issue. But as far as the question, do immigrants make the country, was it better or worse?
Does it hurt or help?
Help the economy?
Yeah, I think even the problem in itself, and I know these are the questions to prompt us, but I feel like the problem is the question, right? Do immigrants hurt the economy? I mean, it's just humans, right? Because citizens are hurting the economy and they're helping the economy. Immigrants can hurt the economy and help the economy. So if we stop looking at it like we're trying to separate people, right? It's the same thing. We're calling them immigrants versus humans. We're saying someone's black versus brown versus white. Because us as humans, half of us are hurting it and half of us are helping it.
Sounds like tribalism to me.
It does. I think she hit the nail on the head right there, though.
Our first 5 episodes were on tribalism and labeling because we felt that that was kind of the forefront of every issue that's in the United States. Here's a funny, interesting fact is I'm also from an immigrant family. I have my family crest tattooed on my back. I got that when I was in Spain, and I told my dad, hey, look at this website. It's the Aldrich Family Foundation. And this is when the internet was kind of new still too.
So who knows if this is real or not?
No, it is. It is. So he contacts, because my dad was in genealogy, he was putting our family tree together, he can only find our branch. So this website tied it all together, and when they said, hey, you were the missing branch of the tree that we've been missing, and now the tree is 100% complete, My ancestor came on the second ship after the Mayflower. That's cool. My ancestry, the Aldrich family.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's cool.
And you can trace that all back historically through this genealogy, through the Aldrich Foundation. So, hey, that kind of sums up the two questions that we want to go into. And I just wanted to kind of recap it and what I got out of it. What I got out of it, I was always mentally prepared to tell the story of my past because I'm not ashamed of that, because that's no longer who I am. So I have nothing to hide. It shows growth mentally from being someone that is ignorant. These are just tough topics to talk about, but these are things that I think that need to be talked about and be in the open, and they don't really clash. Your story and his, they're just two different stories on how you got there. I think if the circumstances were the same, your mom would have done the same thing his wife's parents did. And you
absolutely
know, and maybe that's what they mean by white privileged, is that like I have the privilege of not having to ever have to worry or even fathomly think about that until now. I'm privileged in that way. Not privileged in like it's my right. It's just I was grateful that my upbringing was the way it was, and the struggle I have, you know, everybody struggles, but it doesn't compare your wife's or your mom's struggle or being called racial slurs and stuff like that. That's what I've learned from this. And every episode that we do in this whole podcast, just learn to listen more.
Yeah, definitely learn to listen and hear the other person's viewpoint before we make a fool of ourselves or say something that we really know the answer to or understand where the other person's coming from. So listening to the story is very eye-opening, and it does change a perspective on the reasons why people do what they do.
Oh, absolutely. And then once you hear it and once you understand it, you can say, oh, I get it. That makes sense of why she acts that way or reacted that way or why he feels this way. You know, you got to listen to the story. And I think it's so great that you guys create experiences and opportunities like this to have the exchange.
People in general, I think racist means ignorant. But if I'm given the facts, like, look, man, I mean, maybe I just learned intellectual humility a little bit earlier in my life without knowing it, you know. It's one thing, something happening to you, but to retaliate and put that energy back out there is another thing, too. So, you know, like, if you're called a name or whatever and you take it in and you're the better person for not reacting to it, and, like, this person's ignorant, I just need to leave, you know.
It's like the challenge of my life.
The better person. Because we don't want to be the better person.
I don't knock you for getting, you know, getting scrappy either, because you got to stick
yourself. No, we were just talking about that. Yeah. It's so hard sometimes to be the better person. You know, everybody talks about it. Be positive. Be the better person. Don't react. But the amount of energy it takes to sometimes be that person, it's a lot.
Yeah.
To not let things get to you.
You've been listening to the Collective Perspective Podcast, a mature show with the intention of making a difference in society. The Collective Perspective encourages civil debate on our podcast on very controversial topics. In the month of June, we are doing a 200 Conversations for 200 Years initiative sponsored by 90 Forward. On June 15th, at the Underbelly, downtown Jacksonville, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., we are doing a live race card with our buddy Jeremy Mensy, former Jaguar and a former Gator.
And Tatiana Yoga is author of Life Outside the Game, a Sex Trafficking Testimonial.
DJ PM of Mix Theory Studios is going to be our host DJ. And, you know, have some cocktails and listen to us instead of drinking alone at your house, listening.
Collectively.
Ladies, thank you so much. Like I said, every episode is eye-opening, and I definitely learned from it. And that was one thing about the podcast, is I wanted even more diversity, and it's even great that Sam was able to come, and we're just honored to have you ladies. And if there's anything that we can do to help promote your business.
JacksonvilleNaturalHealing.com, Vive Yoga Studio on Instagram, Jack's Natural Healing on Instagram. We have so many events that we host, so many ways to make healing accessible for the community. We're, I think, 73% Black and Brown yoga studio, yep, which is kind of not the normal.
No.
And so we offer $10
community men as well.
Lots of men, yeah. $10 community classes on the weekends and $2 Tuesdays every Tuesday. So that won't change whenever the podcast airs. And we'd love to have y'all come. Get some stretches on.
Like maybe I said, I do want to learn some yoga, and I got some row classes.
Yeah, we're coming for those there. Row classes.
I need be to there. Fix my lower back.
We got you covered.
Chiropractors,
you got that just too. Just come and we'll fix you.
Well, thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Collective Perspective Podcast, a mature show with the intention of making a difference in society.
So take a ride with us. Join us at the Collective Perspective Podcast, where your personal truths get a little power wash.
Like what you heard? Subscribe to the Collective Perspective Podcast whenever you listen to your podcasts.
You can also show support for our mission by going to buymeacoffee.com/collectivepod and donating whatever you feel inspired to. We appreciate any help keeping the lights on to bring you thoughtful and research content as part of this show.
Visit the Collective Perspective Podcast show page on mtsjax.fm, Jacksonville's new music and multimedia network sponsored by Mixed Theory Studios. You can find the transcripts of this episode along with the show notes, material references, links you heard about, and more.
Hey, I want to give a special shout out and a thanks to The Real Jay Dash, a Jacksonville hero, producer, and artist, for sharing his original music with this show, and to the Mixed Theory Studios for recording and production services. We couldn't have done it without either of them. Thank you so much.